माधव विहारी राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी गोपी जन्म लाभ गिरिवर गारी गोपी जन्म लाभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीर वनचारी जमुना तीरा वन चारी तीरा गे राधा कुंजी हरी राधा माधव जे राधा माधव कुंज विहारी गोपी जन बाला गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन बाल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जन बाल्लभ गिरिवर यशोदानन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना चीरावन चारी जमुना चीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी कुंज विहारी श्री राध माधव की जय ग्रंथ राज श्रीमद भगवताम की जय श्री प्रभुपाद की ठाय गो प्रमानंदे हरि हरि बोल। शिवराय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमाचे भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी के नामने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचालिनी निर्विशेष शृंगवाणी प्रचाचरस्थ ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम Shanti Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We are reading from the fifth canto, titled chapter 13, titled Rahugana Converses with Judd Bharat, and this is text 11. Kvachit cha sitatapa bhata varsha patikriya kartum anisha aste kvachin mito vipanam yach cha kinchid Viveshaṁ Vishyati Uta Vita Satyat Kvachit Chasita Tapavata Varsha Sata Pratikriyam Kartum Anisha Aste Kvachin mito vipanat yatcha kinchin yatcha kinchin vivesham vichat yutta vita satyat Kvachit cha sita tapabhata bhashka Pratikriyam karcha manishta aste Kvachin mito vipanam yatcha kinchid Vidhesham richat yuta vita satyat Kvachit cha sita tapasphata varsha Sita tapasva Pratikriyam kartum anishta aste Kvachin mito vipanam yatcha kinchid Vidvesham richat yuta vita satyat Vesham richat yuta vita satyat It's a pisata pavata vasha. It's a tita tapa bhata varsha. Bhata manisha aste. Kachin mito vipana yatcha kinchin. Ladies. A शिष्य सीता तप भाच वर्षा अतिक्रियं अचिन्मित वीक्षण यच्चकिंचे वेशम मिच्छति उत विशस्यान् Word meanings. Kachit, sometimes. Cha, also. Shita ataba vata varsha. Ataba. A freezing cold, scorching heat, strong wind, and excessive rainfall. Pratikriyam, counteraction. Kartum, to do. Anishta, being unable. Aste, remains in misery. Kachit, sometimes. Mitaha, one another. Vipanan, selling. Yatcha, whatever. Kinchit, a little bit. Vidvesham, mutual enmity. Vichchati, obtain. Uta, it is so said. Vitaschatyat, because of cheating one another merely for money. Translation. Sometimes the living entity is busy counteracting the natural disturbances of freezing cold, scorching heat, strong wind, excessive rainfall, and so forth. When he is unable to do so, he becomes very unhappy. Sometimes he is cheated in business transactions one after another. In this way, by cheating, living entities create enmity among themselves. Purport. This is an example of the struggle for existence, the attempt to counteract the onslaught of material nature. This creates enmity in society, and consequently, society is filled with envious people. One person is envious of another, and this is the way of the material world. The Krishna consciousness movement aims at creating an atmosphere of non-envy. Of course, it is not possible for everyone to become Krishna conscious, but the Krishna conscious movement can create an exemplary society wherein there is no envy. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Mukam karati vachalam pangulangayate girinya kripatam aham vande sri guru dinacharinam. So two things are being discussed here. The nature of this world and our struggle to counteract the miseries that are inflicted upon us, and the envious nature of the conditioned souls, and how we can't expect everyone to be purified, but at least within the Krishna consciousness movement, there should be no envy. So, regarding counteracting material nature, you see these fans here? Prabhupada talks about these fans. In 1975, I had the fortune of being here when the temple was opened and the deities were installed, and in one Bhagavatam class, Prabhupada spoke about the fans.
And I guess at that time in 1975, fans were something special. Was that true? Yeah. So now we have air conditioning. Then it was fans. So Prabhupada was making the point that you think these fans are nice because they cool you off. So you're looking at the side of the cool part, but he said the actual reality is it's hot. It was the middle of April. It was Ram Navami, middle of April, and I remember it was very hot then, really, really hot. So Prabhupada said, "You think the fans are nice?" He said, "But actually, what you should be seeing is that it's hot. Actually, we're suffering, but you don't see that. You look at what we're counteracting, and you look at, oh, we have nice fans, or we have nice air conditioning, or we have nice food system. We have so many ways of counteracting the onslaught of material nature." But Prabhupada is saying, don't look at it that way. Look at it in terms of what you're fighting, because that's the normal. That's the nature of this world. I was joking with the devotees yesterday about how Krishna wants us to go back to Godhead, and he's inviting us. And when Gop Kumar went back to Godhead, Krishna said, "I'm waiting for you. What took you so long? What were you so busy with?" So we were joking, and he said, "But when Krishna asked you what took you so long, you said, 'I was waiting for the iPhone 6 to come out. I wanted to get one, you know, before I went back to Godhead.'" So I was explaining to them that how, from that perspective, because of technology, we think things are going to be better in the future. There'll be more technology. It'll be easier. But from Prabhupada's perspective, he said, no, focus on what's real. Now, as we all know, Krishna did an expert job of designing the material world. And just as they have this concept or this reality called planned obsolescence, when you buy a product, they make it in such a way it will only last for a certain period of time, so you'll have to get a new one. It will break down. So Krishna has designed the material world also to break down. The body breaks down, and as we all know, we all have experience of. And that serves as an impetus. And so many devotees come to me with problems that are actually not solvable. They're just out of their control. They're out of my control. I can tell them how to deal with the problem in terms of their consciousness. But externally, sometimes situations are such that they're completely out of our control. Right? And it's just a reminder from Krishna of where we're living, of the conditions that we're living in, and the bad choice we made to come here. And this is, as we say, the price we have to pay. So it serves as an impetus, because if the world were perfect, you wouldn't be here right now. You'd be on some beach in some tropical island, right, sipping coconuts. I just heard Prabhupada was saying, or you'd be, and if you like skiing, you'd be on top of a mountain skiing. So Prabhupada, we were listening to a lecture yesterday, and Prabhupada was saying, or morning walk, he was saying that he studied economics in college, and an economics professor, there was one professor at a theory, he said, if you don't have to work, nobody would work. If there was no necessity to work, nobody would work. If you had enough. Right? So, if this world were perfect, where would we all be right now? Would we be here? If the weather was perfect? If all the marriages were perfect? If all the relationships were perfect? If we didn't have to work, everything we needed was supplied, where would we be? All the temples would be empty, all the churches would be empty, all the mosques would be empty, all the religions would be bankrupt. But because it's not like that, people come to God. But for us, we're already here. So So, although Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita very clearly, we should be attracted to the descriptions of the spiritual world, we should be attracted to going there. In the same morning walk, Prabhupada said, in the spiritual world, you don't have to work. That alone should be attractive enough to get you there, don't you think? But wouldn't you like to go to a place where you don't have to work? Wouldn't that be nice? I was just in Sharjah, Dubai, and so I was talking to several devotees. They work 12 hours a day, and they commute 1 hour each way, so they're gone 14 hours a day. And I was in another country in the Middle East, and the devotees were saying they work shifts, and every few days the shift changes. So some days they have day shifts, and some days they have night shifts. I mean, if you just have night or you just have day, you can deal with it. But they have some days and some nights. And they said, Prabhu, how can I be Krishna conscious in this situation? I said, you can't. You don't have any time for sadhana. 14 hours a day. You don't have to chant your rounds while you're driving. You know? I mean, I don't want to say you can't, but it's difficult. So, Prabhupada says, we should be attracted to the spiritual world, the descriptions of the spiritual world. You don't have to work. Wow. That alone should attract most people. But, there's a but here, and we have to understand the but. That pure devotional service is rendered to Krishna without desire. So in pure devotional service, you don't want to go back to Godhead. And even you don't want to get free from suffering. Because the desire to become free from suffering is called jnana mishra bhakti. It's bhakti, but it's mixed with the desire for liberation, freedom from suffering. So it appears to be a contradiction. Because one of my godbrothers told Prabhupada, I just want to come back life after life. And Prabhupada said, no. You should want to go back to Godhead. Because he asked this early on in the movement. Because in his stage, if he comes back life after life, that's dangerous. Because he may come back and decide to stay here. Right? So Prabhupada's saying, you should want to go back to Godhead. But that's for the neophyte. Because the nature of this world pushes. But for those cultivating pure devotional service, even the desire to want to go back to God, it is an impurity. That's called jnana mishra bhakti. So we shouldn't even, although we use the miseries of mature life as an impetus to go back to Godhead, but our motive in serving Krishna should not be to become free from suffering. It should be simply to please Him. That's pure devotional service. If you want to chant Shuddha Nam, Shuddha, if you want the Shuddha Nam, then Hari Bol, then you can't ask the name for anything, even freedom from suffering. It's not Shuddha, right? Shuddha Nam gives pure bhakti. Shuddha Nam, that's redundant. Shuddha Nam gives love of Krishna. Namabhas does not give love of Krishna. Namaparad does not give love of Krishna. Shuddhanam gives love of Krishna. And Shuddhanam can only be chanted by Shuddhabhakta, one who's not asking Krishna for anything, even liberation. I just want to love you. And then you can chant Shuddhanam. In Mayapur, 1976, I believe, some devotee organized a kirtan competition. So they had devotees would form groups and they invited other professional groups and they would do kirtan and the judges would be there. Like in America you have American Idol, then you had, you know, whatever, Kirtan Idol, you know. Kirtan Wala, you know. What do they have in India? You've Got Talent, right? Sri Sri Krishna Balarama ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Shamsundra ki jai, Sri Sri Gaurinitai ki jai, Hai Gopinaja. So it was kind of like, Mayapur's Got Talent, you know. So, Prabhupada wasn't so happy with it. Because they had many professional groups chanting. So, one group was chanting in a professional, stylized way, very showy. You know that kind of kirtan. It draws attention to the person chanting. It doesn't draw attention to Krishna. It's very, you know, long, drawn out. Krishna, like that. So they were doing kirtan, Maha Mantra, but in that style, and Prabhupada said, they're not chanting Hare Krishna. We were hearing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and he said they're not chanting Hare Krishna. What are they chanting? They're not chanting Durga Mantra. They're not chanting Shiva Mantra. They're not chanting Lakshmi Narayan Mantra. They're not chanting any other mantra. And Prabhupada said, they're not chanting Hare Krishna. What were they chanting? Prabhupada said they were chanting money, money, money. Because if you won the competition, or if you're a professional kirtaneer, then you're not chanting Hare Krishna, you're chanting, I chant, but you give me money. That's what you're chanting. So you're actually chanting money. You're not chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Sounds like you're chanting Hare Krishna, but you're chanting money, money, money. Yes? So, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has explained that if one chants the holy name with the desire for something material, that is called Nam Aparag. Just like you see in Bhagavatam, sometimes it's said, there are different kinds of Namabhas. It's just somebody's making fun of you, Hare Krishna, laughing and joking, or they're criticizing you, Hare Krishna, or they're indicating something else, Hare Ram, like that. That's called Namabhas. This is the first time they've ever chanted, and that's Namabhas. And someone could be chanting every day and chant Namaparag. Doesn't add Namabhas, there's no aparad. They're not chanting to get something material. They're just making fun of you. It's considered Namabhas. Interesting, right? So, if we chant against something material, if it's not for Krishna's service, that's Namabhas. If we chant sincerely, trying to purify ourselves, that's the first one is Nam Aparad, to the advanced material. If we chant sincerely, it's Nam Abbas. And if we chant without even the desire to become free from suffering, I was reading the other day, someone was talking. We have to become detached even from the desire to be detached. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, if Krishna wanted, I would have 100 children. You can do the math. If you have 100 children, how many times you have to have sex? And he was Naishtiki Brahmachari, and he was willing to give that up if it was for Krishna's desire. That's renunciation. Isn't it? That's amazing. I mean, think about that. It's so amazing. Didn't he say 100? Isn't it? Didn't he say 100? I would have 100. So you're going to have 100 children? And he's a renunciate. Naishtiki Brahmachari. And he said, if Krishna wants, I would do that. That's pure devotional service. And then in that consciousness, you can chant Shudhanam, and then you can get love of Krishna. That's it. So even the material miseries, they're great impetus in a certain level of bhakti, but on a higher level it's considered an impurity. Jnana Mishra. To come to the stage of Nishta, Madhyam, Adhikari, to come to that stage of Nishta, there has to be this purity. Sattvagun, at least Sattvagun. There has to be this purity that I'll do this for Krishna without consideration of my happiness. That's Nishta, Anartha Nivritti. And then when you begin from the stage of Nishta, then you can begin chanting. The beginning stages of chanting purely, Shudhanam. There's a couple other things Prabhupada says here. One thing he says, it's not possible for everyone to be Krishna conscious. And often people ask the question, what if everyone becomes Krishna conscious? What will happen to the world? Because they think everyone will just chant Hare Krishna. And no one will do anything. No one will drive trucks. Trains won't run. Planes won't fly. No one will work. There is some truth to that. One time Prabhupada said, you're working so hard in your factories to supply yourselves with conveniences. He said, just like we have this chair, because we have the chair, there has to be a factory to build it. You can sit on the ground, then you don't need a factory. Keep it simple. So Prabhupada was very into simple living, because every time you want a comfort, you need a factory to produce it. And you need a truck or a train or a boat or an airplane to transport it, and everything gets complicated. But anyway, that's a side point. But anyway, so Prabhupada was asked the famous, the perennial question everyone asks, what if everyone in the world becomes Krishna conscious? And Prabhupada said, don't worry, it's not going to happen. So that's your answer if anybody asks you. So don't worry. Prabhupada said, don't worry, there's not enough intelligent people out there that the whole world will become Krishna conscious. There just aren't. So here in the purport, Prabhupada says something really important. He said, the nature of this world is that people are envious. It's right there in the Bhagavad Gita. Dvesha, envy, hatred, raga, dvesha. That's why we came here. And he said, but in the Krishna... Well, let me read what Prabhupada said and get this clear. Of course, it is not possible for everyone to become Krishna conscious, but the Krishna consciousness movement can create an exemplary society wherein there is no envy. So the key word here is can. It's not going to happen automatically. I want to tell you a nice story. You'll like this story. I spent many years in Mauritius, and every time a devotee visits Mauritius, especially a godbrother, would come. Here we have a live Mauritian. Come, we're talking about Mauritius. I have a bona fide Mauritian here. You can see what he looks like. This is what they look like there. This is my friend. I gave him the name Hari Sari, because when he joined, he did everything wrong. And he'd always come to my office and say, I'm sorry, Prabhu. So I said, your name is Hari Sari. So every time one of my godbrothers would visit there, they would say, oh, Mauritius is such a nice place. Prabhupada said it could be the first Krishna conscious country. Well, no, not could. It would be. Prabhupada said it would be. Okay, so we're waiting for it to happen. He said it would be, you know. Kind of, you know. Go to Mauritius now. IT is there. Everywhere you look, left and right, there are malls. One of the poorest countries in the world when Prabhupada went there. Right? I have another bona fide Mauritian there. Right next to the temple, there's a BMW car dealer. Never even imaginable when I first went there in 1982. Anyone could even afford one. Anyway, so everyone would say, Prabhupada said, Mauritius would be the first Krishna conscious country. And I said, I don't think Prabhupada said that. No, everybody said he said it. I said, I don't think he said it. I don't think he would say that. So, we have another bona fide Mauritian back there. Yes? How do you know? Madhava's mother, Madhava's sister. I can't see both in one. I can't see that far. And someone's blocking me here. Yeah. So I did some research, and I said, I'm gonna talk to everyone I can who was there when Prabhupada was there. I'm gonna ask them, did Prabhupada say this? So I met everybody I could meet, and I said, did you ever hear Prabhupada say Mauritius would be the first Krishna conscious country? And they said, no, I never heard that. I said, oh, my suspicion is correct. So finally, I got to meet the man who hosted Prabhupada. So he was with Prabhupada, Mr. Tilak. He was probably with him the whole time, basically. From the time Prabhupada got there to the time Prabhupada left, he was with him. So if anyone heard it, it was him. So finally, one day, Mr. Tilak is with us, and I said, Mr. Tilak, did you ever hear Prabhupada say Mauritius would be the first Krishna conscious country in the world? And he said, should I tell you what he said? He said, no. And then like 30 seconds later, he thought for 30 seconds and then he said, but he did say it could become the first Krishna conscious country. There's a little difference there, right? It would and it could. So, Prabhupada saying in the purport, what did he say? The Krishna conscious movement can create an exemplary society where there is no envy. Didn't say it would. He said it can. One devotee asked Prabhupada, how far is Mahaprabhu's prediction true every town and village? And Prabhupada said, that depends on the preachers. Another time, very interesting story. Devotees first went to Bengal and it was steeped in communism and worship of Durga. And they're having so much difficulty preaching. And one of the devotees said, Prabhupada, we can't preach here. The people, they're not submissive. They're not interested. And Prabhupada said, they're not interested or you can't make them interested. He threw it back. Then Prabhupada told the story that during the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the mission of Vivekanand Parma, what was it? Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. That mission, it was prior to the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta becoming successful. That mission was most powerful, at least in Bengal, maybe all over India. But during the time of Bhaktisiddhanta, it practically was finished. And after Bhaktisiddhanta disappeared, again it became more powerful. And Prabhupada said it was the fault of the Gaudiya Math that the Ramakrishna mission is succeeding today. Because they kept it at bay, but when the Gaudiya Math divided, they lost their power and that mission became strong again. So he blamed them. Interesting, right? So, I want to tell you a story. This story is one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard. And it relates to envy in a very broad way. And I think you'll like this story. There was a devotee during the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He lived in the Math. He was a full-time devotee. But they found, or they discovered, that he wasn't chanting any rounds. So they went to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and they told him, you know, it's a kind of a big thing. You're living in a temple. You should be chanting your rounds. That's a requirement. So they were upset and they were concerned. And they went to him with their concern that he's living in the temple and he's not chanting his rounds. And so, what do you think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's reply would be? He was known as Nasingha Guru. Kick him out! Tell him if he doesn't chant his rounds, he has to leave tomorrow morning. Didn't say that. If that were ISKCON 1972, that's what we would say, right? Anyone from that era, around here, touch with it, we would say that? Anyway, not everyone would say it, but I wouldn't be surprised if somebody said that. Although, as a side point, I'll tell you a nice story. A side point to the other nice story. There was a devotee that joined ISKCON who had taken so many drugs that it actually took him all day to chant his rounds. Because after each mantra, he would just stare and stop chanting. That's where the word space out came from. We use the word space out to mean you're not focused or concentrating, but it actually meant people who were taking drugs would just stare off into outer space, and they wouldn't do anything. So this devotee was still affected by drugs. He would chant a mantra, stare, space out, chant a half a mantra, two words, rarely chant one mantra full. And it took them all day, so they didn't know what to do. So they wrote Prabhupada. Said, Prabhupada, he doesn't do any service. It takes him all day to chant his rounds. What should we do with him? You know, they were thinking, should ask him to leave. Prabhupada said, if that's all he can do, then just let him chant. Finish his rounds. Interesting, right? 16 rounds, so important, and Prabhupada let him chant all day. Now, here's this devotee, he's not chanting any rounds. They go to Bhaktisiddhanta, they complain. This is a serious problem. He's a senior devotee, important member of the mat, and he's not chanting any rounds. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, he has more bhakti than I have. How is that possible? He has more bhakti than I have. His heart is overflowing with bhakti. How is that? He's not even chanting his rounds. Our Shastra says the symptom of advancement is you have taste for nam. That's right. If you're advancing, you come to ruchi. A lot of devotees say, Prabhu, you know, when I chant my rounds, you know, in the morning it's good, but if I chant later in the day, then I can't focus. That's all because we don't have ruchi. When you have ruchi, morning, noon, evening, it's good anytime, right? You have an appetite, food tastes good. Morning, noon, evening, it always tastes good. When you don't have an appetite, it never tastes good. So ruchi, you have a strong appetite for chanting, right? That's the sign you're advancing. You have ruchi for nam. So he's not chanting, that would be a sign this is a problem. And Bhaktisiddhanta says, he has more bhakti than I have. How is that? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, just see. He's not even chanting his rounds. All day he's engaged in service. His heart has so much bhakti, it's overflowing. He's got such a reserve of bhakti that even if he doesn't chant his rounds, he's still engaged all day. If I didn't chant my rounds, in a few days I would fall down, go away. Amazing. What's he saying? He's setting an example for us. Because by nature we're envious. By nature we're critical. By nature we put people down. By nature we find fault. He's setting example. Here, there's a fault. It's very clear. But he's setting example. See, I'm seeing him better than I am. Isn't it? He's better than me. I would fall back. I'm seeing this person better than me. How often do we see someone better than us who has a fault? We always see them with the faults. You are decorated with faults. I see your decorations of faults. I don't see your Ratna Bhushan, I see your Ninda Bhushan, you know. I see you're decorated with faults. That's what I'm seeing. So, here, Prabhupada said, we can create a society, it's not envious. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in this example, he shows us how to do that. Now, another important thing, humility. Humility, when there's humility, there is not fault finding. So humility means you see others better than you. Fault finding means you see others worse than you. You know the story that Ramanujacharya, he didn't want to walk, he heard that he's going to Tirupati, and he didn't want to walk with his feet. So he climbed up so he wouldn't have to put his feet on the mountain because the mountain is Vishnu. And so he didn't want to make the ascent. And he was climbing up, and his spiritual master heard he was climbing up, and he was thinking, this isn't good. because now everybody's going to do this and it's not necessary. So his spiritual master climbed halfway down the mountain to tell him, don't do this, because everyone will do this. Everyone doesn't have to do this. And he said, Guru Maharaj, why did you come? You could have sent somebody to tell me. Why did you have to take all the trouble to come down? As Guru Maharaj said, because I couldn't find anybody lower than me to tell. So I did it myself. Amazing, huh? So, humility manifests in thinking others are better. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was asked, how many disciples you have? He said, 4. 2 arms and 2 legs. They do whatever I tell them. Outside of that, I have no disciples. I am servant of everyone. My only servants are these 2 arms and 2 legs. Everyone else, I am servant. This word Prabhu, this word was used, this was not traditionally used in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, the word Prabhu. It was used by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to address his disciples. He introduced it. May have been used rarely, but at the time of Bhakti Siddhanta, he introduced this word Prabhu, and this is how he addressed his disciples. So he's showing us how to become free from envy. To see, oh, what a great devotee this is. You're not standing around, but you're better than me. If I didn't stand my rounds, I would fall down. You're doing service every day. Sometimes disciples would come to complain. He would say, tell me something good about the disciples. So he would mention something good. Sometimes that was difficult also to mention something good. And then the disciple would want to complain now about this devotee. And Bhakti Siddhanta said, just focus on the good. He wouldn't hear. So he was teaching, focus on the good. Now, Prabhupada said something quite strong. A lot of devotees during Prabhupada's time had difficulty getting along, and so they would write Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would get so many letters. At one point, after so many problems, he said, here's the problem. The problem is you all want to be God. That's it. That's where the problem comes from. You all want to be God. So, there's one other thing I want to mention that I think is important. You might say, Prabhu, you're asking me to be non-envious, but I'm a conditioned soul, and symptomatically as a conditioned soul, I'm envious. So I can't follow that instruction. Prabhupada's saying we should create a society where there's no envy, but I'm a conditioned soul, that means I'm envious, right? That's my stamp, envy. That's why I'm here. I'm not there. I'm here, so that's my qualification, right? But there's an important principle that Jiva Goswami taught, and Prabhupada also taught. Jiva Goswami applied this principle to humility, but it can apply to any quality. So Jiva Goswami asked the question, is humility required to become Krishna conscious? Is it a byproduct of Krishna consciousness? Like when you become Krishna conscious, you become humble. Or is it an ingredient of Krishna consciousness? Like you can't be Krishna conscious unless you have it. Do you need Krishna consciousness to get it? If you're Krishna conscious, you have it. Is it an ingredient? You can't be Krishna conscious without it. Or is it a byproduct? Do you understand? Is humility the road to humility? Well, you just become Krishna conscious and you'll get it as a byproduct. Or do you need it to become Krishna conscious? And his answer was, it's all three. Now, all the answers are right. So let's apply this to envy. See, I'm envious. All right. And I can't follow this verse. I can't create a society of non-envious. At least I can't contribute because I'm envy. So taking this example, we may be envious, but we should practice behavior that's not based on envy, whether it's based on service, appreciation, humility. So even though I'm envious, it doesn't mean I have to act that way. Just like many of you know the story, this devotee in the early days of the movement said, Prabhupada, I don't bow down because I don't feel like it. It was like a very American New York, very American New York. You can confirm, right? I don't feel like bowing. I was Cargo Money. I don't feel like bowing down, so I'm not going to bow down. Why should I do it? I don't feel like it. It's artificial. Plus, you know, who am I? Why should I bow down to anybody? That kind of attitude. And so Prabhupada's answer was, do it. Even if you don't feel like it, do it. Because by doing it, your mentality changes. So Prabhupada said, if you do it, you'll feel like doing it. So the point is, sometimes we don't feel like doing something, but if we do it, it changes the mentality. Right? So nobody should say, I'm envious, therefore I can't, I'm hopeless, I'm just going to be a fault finder, and whatever. No, but you practice the actions of those who are not envious. How would they act? Goswamis of Vrindavan, gentle. They were liked by the ruffians and the gentle. Everybody liked them. That means non-envious. The servant, not a fault finder, like that. So practice it. By practice it, the mentality changes. If you wait for the mentality to change before you practice it, you might be waiting for lifetimes. Right? I'm still envious. I've been a devotee so many years. I'm still envious. I'm waiting for the envy to go away before I can deal with devotees in a non-envious way. No, that's not smart. The smart thing is you practice it. Practicing it changes the mentality. You go tell somebody, appreciate somebody. It will help you. So Bhaktisiddhanta taught this very important principle. He taught we should appreciate. And my realization, after studying this, and studying many things that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said and did, is that appreciation, we should see it as a sadhana, as a practice that purifies our heart and changes our mentality. We shouldn't see it as something optional. Just, you know, it's nice if you appreciate other devotees. Rather, see it as a practice. It actually changes our heart. A necessary practice to purify us. Otherwise, the tendency to be envious can be overpowering. So, we have a few minutes. I will stop and ask your questions or comments. Yes. We have a microphone. Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama
Hare Bol. Thank you for a very important lesson, but earlier in the class you had mentioned the standard of pure devotional service, chanting Shuddha Naam, also being a Shuddha Bhakta, and that one, you were mentioning, you can't even be desiring to become detached. You can't, I heard one devotee say, you can't be chanting because you want to become pure. The only purpose would be to please Krishna.
Yeah.
There are so many instructions. Just even just in Bhagavad Gita or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, Charayiva Vishayera Maya, let me become free from worldliness. He's praying his offenses will cease so he can relish Sudhana. In Bhagavad Gita, Asanga Sashtena Videna Chitra, with a weapon of detachment, one must cut down this big banyan tree of material life. And then the following soon, is that Nirmana Mohaji, the Sangha Dosha, Dhyantan, and all that, different prerequisites. So how could it, how it seems, it's kind of like in America we say catch 22.
Yeah.
or even just seem plain discouraging, that it's a defect in my practice or my consciousness to want something which, without it, I can't only want to please Krishna. So how do we work that out?
Very good question. It's true. Not only did that devotee said, I think it was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, we shouldn't chant to become pure, we should chant to please Krishna only. Yeah, that's true. I think we have to deal with the level of advancement and realization we're on, because what's good on one level is you give it up on another level. So, and at the same time, you can't be artificial, because that purity, when it awakens, you'll come to that stage where you won't even care about pure or not pure. You just want to please Krishna. I mean, of course, you want to chant purely to please Krishna. I'll tell a little story, and maybe it'll help answer it, maybe indirectly. A devotee asked Prabhupada, he said, please give me your mercy, or I want Krishna's mercy. And Prabhupada said, you're not advanced enough to handle his mercy, because if you get it, then you'll exhibit symptoms of advancement and become proud. Like we joke, you know, I'm proud of being humble. But I'm the most humble devotee here. So there is that sense that if I advance, I could become proud of my advancement. So there may be that sense of impurity that I want to. Why do I want to be pure? Is there some impure motive in why I want to be pure? That can be there. But I think you're right, at a certain stage, well, praying for taste, that's not an impure motive. Thakur Haridas prayed for taste, so that's a pure motive. Because taste is a stage of advancement, and so which inherent within the prayer of a devotee is, I just want to be pleasing to Krishna. And so if advancing means being pleasing, then that's the right motive. If it's just to become free from suffering, or to get some reputation, or just to enjoy chanting Hare Krishna, then, you know, some impurity is there. And it's so refined. Just like, for example, you know, when Krishna played his flute, some of the gopis, they couldn't go. Their husbands stopped them. So why did their husbands stop them? And why didn't the husbands of the other gopis stop them? Because those gopis were not yet completely pure. They had to be a little more purified. So their husbands didn't stop them because they didn't want them to go to Krishna. Their husbands are devotees. Their husbands are part of the leader. Their husbands stopped them because they weren't yet qualified. You know, it's not in Krishna Leela that the gopis' husbands, so-called husbands, are against Krishna, and they don't want their wives to be with Krishna. They do, but they serve that Leela. So even on that level, that there's some impurity. So, you know, it's such a subtle thing. So we understand theoretically that pure nam is, I just want to please Krishna. There's a letter we got, 1971, I think. It wasn't a letter, it was a... Shyamasundar was noting down different things Prabhupada said, and he would send these letters to the temple, and you'd get like 10 or 20 quotes. You remember that? You'd get these 1970, 71, you'd get these, you know, it was like the precursor to Facebook. You know, this is what Prabhupada said. So one letter Prabhupada said, anyone who will spread Krishna consciousness and will go anywhere to spread Krishna consciousness and not care how he'll live, where's he going to stay, or how he'll sleep, I'll take the dust from his feet, I'll put it on my head. So, in other words, Prabhupada showing us, this is pure devotional service. I'll go out and do this service despite my happiness, what I get, what I don't get. So that's the level we're trying to come to. So as we advance, then I think we'll understand these things. But I agree with you, on a certain level, it's very healthy to be motivated to become more pure, to become more anything. And Prabhupada wanted us to be. It's our duty to be pure. He wanted us to be more humble. So we should be motivated by this, for sure. But as you get higher, it's more Krishna. I just want to see Krishna smile. One time they said, Prabhupada said, why are we distributing books? And you give so many reasons why. And Prabhupada said, we're distributing books because we want to see Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur smile. So that, you know, and then why did we distribute Prabhupada's books? Because we want to see Prabhupada smile. So that's what Prabhupada taught us. So I don't know if that answers the question, but I think on one level, what is a strong impetus? On another level, we will be considered a mishra, a mixture that's not yet pure. But on a lower level, it helps. On a higher level, it will be considered impure. Yes, what do you say?
But just to suggest what we sometimes refer to as the adjustment, is that these desires to obtain the kind of mentality I need in order to please Krishna, I don't think it's outside the purview of pure devotional service. The problem, as you suggested earlier, is just that when desire for purity, the desire for indifference to my bodily demands, I mean, there's a whole school of Stoics, and they have nothing, they're not Krishna conscious at all, but they're just trying to become, you know, like stone or something like that.
Yeah.
So as long as these attributes, these acquisitions, spiritual acquisitions, are connected with Krishna and the desire to please Krishna, then at least I wouldn't feel that it was any type of a defect or anything like that. Because we just hear the acharyas, and lately I've been focused on that song, Kaviri Habi Bolo, Sehi Namar, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the whole song is just still, just what you just mentioned. He's also praying to that. When will I forget about my own happiness? So you can say, well, he's not trying to please Krishna, he's trying to acquire something, that indifference towards his own happiness. But he wants that so he can please Krishna.
Yeah, that's the key. As you rightly said, that's the key, if it pleases Krishna. There are many statements that are difficult to understand. Bhakti Siddhanta said even, I forget how he said it, but something along the lines of even the desire to be humble is impure. So he saw some impurity there. So all we have to do is discover within ourselves if there is any impurity within a pure desire. And that impurity would be other than giving Krishna pleasure, giving Guru pleasure. Thank you for sharing that. You had a question. Or we have to end class now? But he's got the microphone.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for your very sweet class.
Jai, Haribol.
It was also a follow-up question of seeking clarity on this point about our desires for pure devotional service. It is saying in the Vyasa Bhagavatamrita, when the Vaikuntha Vishnu Dutas are speaking to Gopal Kumar, that they describe how even the Praman Bhaktas have desire for going back home, back to Godhead, although they have prema in this world, and that prema is non-different from Vaikuntha, still they have desire for going back home, back to Godhead, in order to associate with the Supreme Lord. So I was thinking some clarification.
The Vaikuntha, those in the Vaikuntha planets, yeah. But not the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Because, you see, the point Prabhupada makes is when you're Krishna conscious, you're already with Krishna. So there's no going back, you're already there. And there's a morning walk. This illustrates it really well. They're talking about, the devotee asked the question, said, Prabhupada, is it true that the spiritual master takes the sinful reactions of the disciple? And Prabhupada said, yes. Therefore, Mahaprabhu says, one should not accept many disciples. And then Prabhupada said, but we are prepared to go to hell for Krishna. So, that if Krishna wants that, then we do that. So, we are following in the footsteps of the gopis. If we have to go to hell to make Krishna happy, we do that. That's our aspiration. So that's a higher form of love. So yes, maybe Vaikuntha, they want that form or that to be on the same planet, those different kinds of liberation. But the pure devotee doesn't. There's an amazing, amazing conversation. The Prabhupada said, please, he told his disciples, please open 108 temples. If you open 100 temples, I can die in peace, and then I can go to hell. And the devotees were in shock, and they said, Prabhupada, if you go to hell, we're going with you. And Prabhupada said, no. He said, no. You're Vaishnavas. You're going back to Krishna, I'm going to hell. So, that was Prabhupada going into the mood of the Mahabhagavat, just exhibiting that. But in that mood, the devotee's prepared to go anywhere, or he feels that he deserves it. So, it's still an impurity to want to go back to Krishna. But in a lower stage, it's a very strong impetus to get out of the material world. So it's good in one stage. Does that make sense? What's good in one stage will not be good in another stage. And then, as Gaudiya Vaishnava, that's our desire. You had a question? What?
Hare Krishna, please.
Yes.
So, first, deity step, Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha, then Bhajan Kriya, then Anant Nivritti, then taste comes, Ruchi comes, then Bhav, then Prem. So, we are doing Sadhu Sangha, we are doing Bhajan Kriya also, we are hearing lecture, we are doing Parikrama, everything we are doing.
Sure.
But why my heart, the Anant Nivritti is not going? Lust, greed, anger, like, why this thing is not going, then taste will come. So, that taste, because I am not eager to get that taste or what?
Yeah, that may be. He's asking why Ruchi doesn't come. Because Ruchi is a stage of bhakti and it takes time. It will come, but it takes time if you chant without offense and you serve the Vaishnavas. But you have to be patient. It will come. Prabhupada said it may take 40 years before it comes of chanting Nam. Don't offend Vaishnavas, don't offend the name. Do seva, do sadhana, chant at least 16 rounds every day, and the ruchi will come. It's a stage. It's going to take time. You have to earn it. There's a lot of lifetimes of contamination. But the holy name is powerful, so just be patient. And pray. You can pray for ruchi. No problem. I pray for it all the time. And Krishna will give it. Just have faith. Krishna will give it to you. You wanted to say something?
Mentioning the aspects of material desires and standing for them is kind of the same lines of, I think, the eighth offense, Karma Kanda.
Yeah, Karma Mishra Bhakti, yeah.
But Prabhupada also mentioned if you do have material desires, then do you use Krishna in that aspect?
So the idea is that, yeah, he's asking, is that like Karma Kanda? But the idea is it's Bhakti. So it's called Karma Mishra Bhakti. Bhakti is there, Karma Kanda is without Bhakti. So there's Karma Mishra Bhakti. Okay, so I'm doing bhakti, but still I have some desires I want Krishna to fulfill. At least the bhakti's there. So it's not pure yet. But you're advanced because of the bhakti part. You'll get purified. So, and come as you are. That's Krishna's program. Come as you are, and you'll get purified. And Prabhupada what he did in Bhagavad Gita, he didn't mess around. Right in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, he said it's about pure devotional service. That's what it's all about. He put that right up front. He didn't wait till the 18th chapter. Sarvadharma Paritaja. He put, basically, Sarvadharma Paritaja was coming up in the second chapter. So Prabhupada, you know, he gave it to us. Okay, you can come as you are, but this is the goal, pure devotional service. And he gave it to us right away. Yes. Didn't he? Right away? Second chapter? Pure bhakti? Yes?
Hi, Krishna Guru. Just a quick question. Okay. As long as you make that statement that the gopis who couldn't go to the Rasalila because they were stopped by their husbands were unable to do so because they weren't purified enough. I was just wondering if you could explain where that is from, just for my...
Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavatam. But the understanding is that generally you don't reach beyond Baba in this life, and you can't enter Krishna Lila eternal, in the eternal pastimes of Krishna in Goloka, until you reach Prema or Vastu Siddhi. So when you see Baba, then you go to Krishna's pastimes, and then you get purified. So because they couldn't go, they felt so much separation, it purified their last tinges of material contamination. So Baba is Srup Siddhi. You know your relationship now, but it's not, there's something that's not completely pure. So you go into Krishna Lila, and then you get trained. One devotee was saying, if you don't like authority, you're not going to want to go back to Godhead, because you're going to work under authority. You'll be in a group. So you'll get trained. So you get trained, and then when you achieve your Vastu Siddhi, then you'll go back to Godhead. So Baba is the preliminary stage of love of God. And there's lower stages of Baba, and there's higher stages of Baba. And you know all the symptoms and the ecstasies you can study. Vibhav, Anubhav, Satvika Bhav, Udipana, Lambana, you can, you know. So that's all the stage of Baba, all these ecstasies. But then you go in Krishna's Leela, and then you get trained up. Like when I was in Mauritius, the president of India came, so he invited all the important people of Mauritius, and I got to go. And they showed us how we're going to receive him, and we did a rehearsal. And then when he came, we could do it properly. So you go into Krishna Leela, you get trained. And then you become qualified to enter the Leelas when you're completely purified. So the whole point is, they couldn't go, and their husbands didn't randomly stop them. That was all yoga maya, because they weren't ready for the rasa dance. And then they got purified. And that was it. That's how it works. So the future is bright in Krishna consciousness. Just be patient, and it'll all happen. The Ruchi will come, Asakti will come, Bhava will come. Now, the interesting thing is that before you get Bhava, you get traces of it in every level of devotional service, because every level is just Bhava being matured. So as you get Ruchi, you're close, you have more Bhava. As you get Asakti, you have more Bhava. And then when you get to Bhava, you have it full. Even in Shraddha, in the beginning, you have a little Bhava, because Bhava is the ingredient of devotional service. So each stage is just an increase. And you have Ruchi in Shraddha and Bhajana Kriya, but just a little bit. But when you get to the stage of Ruchi, then it's always there. You always have Ruchi. Chanting is always sweet. Some days it's sweet, some days it isn't. For us, at Ruchi, it's always sweet. Is that okay? Look forward to that day. I hope you get there soon. By being in Vrindavan, it will come more quickly. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.